हरिः ॐ सहनवतु सहनौ भुनक्थु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। Okay, so then Tattva Sutras, chapter 3, Chit, Achit, Adarta, or Tara, Matter, page 93. In the Ishu Upanishad, mantra 11, it is said, only one who can learn the process of nescience and that of transcendental knowledge side by side can transcend the influence of repeated birth and death and enjoy the full blessings of immortality. Because you need to know when it says side by side, it's not that you're just studying two different things at the same time. It means that you're seeing the connection between them. You're studying the two and you're seeing the connection between them. So you're seeing the position of the Supreme Lord, the position of the material nature, and then what that relationship is between them. Then you can actually, transcend the influence of birth and death. Enjoy the full blessings of immortality, because you can get the blessings of immortality, and karma or jnana, but you can't get the full blessings. That's going back to Godhead, because full blessings means you go there, you stay there. The other ones, you get blessings, you go for some time, and you come back. In the Shankhya Karika, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is described in these words. The root of matter does not change. From that root, seven transformations, beginning with Mahatattva, are manifested. From them, 16 transformations are manifested. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is beyond the root of matter and its various transformations. The Supreme Personality of Godhead tells the demigod Brahma, Srimad Bhagavatam 2.9.34, O Brahma, whatever appears to be of any value, but is without relation to me, has no reality. Know it as my illusory energy, that reflection which appears to be darkness. Because if you don't see something of value in connection to Krishna, so in other words, what you see is your values by the Pramitri Chaitanya, then what you observe is your values. You see what's of your value, you analyze things in connection with your value, you apply things and identify and apply things according to your value. So it's always about your value. So that's how your consciousness is working. You can say, oh, but I can't be conscious of everything, but who asked you to be conscious of everything? You're conscious of what's your values, right? And that's the point, is different living entities have different values, where the focus is. So that's why then the Varnashram system requires such a wide range. See, in the modern concept of making everybody equal, then it's very impersonal because it doesn't consider the wide range of mentality. It doesn't consider, right? It means a common person doesn't have so much drive, because he doesn't have so much drive. Then he only works a certain amount. In other words, he gets enough done. Some have less drive, they get less than enough. Some just get enough. Some get, and then they can put away to consider intelligence. But then you see is that those who can create a huge amount of surplus, they have immense drive. So because of that immense drive, they also have that desire for that. I mean, in other words, it's a value for them. So in other words, economics is their value, so they want things in that aspect. While others, economics isn't the value, They just want security or some facility or something. You know, it'll be used in different areas. So in the Vedic system, then there's one group who they focus on economics. It's their thing. And from that, then they can make lots of money. But at the same time, is because of the direction, they have to give it charity. They have to pay their taxes. They have to properly take care of those who are their dependents. You know, they can't cheat on any of those levels. Their greed means, in other words, they want more money, make more money. Don't try to cheat and get more money out of less work. Right? So in other words, everybody works fully and they get the benefit of the value they want. So in the modern context, oh, take all the money away from these guys and then we'll all live happily. It's so short. It's so common. It's so short. Means, in other words, leadership knows it won't do anything. But the point is the common people think it will. So therefore you project that, you become famous, you become popular. But the point is if you don't have people that have so much value and money that work so hard, there won't be that much money. And that's why you see is you can take it away and then you get this and that, and then it'll all collapse because they won't. So in other words, the Vaishya class makes all the money for the whole society. And then they, because they're doing that, they get to keep an extra bit. Right? Just like the Kshatriyas, it's about that control and authority and power and doing things properly. So they have the control over the whole thing. But it's regulated. You know, in other words, they respect the Brahmins, they have to take care of everybody else, this and that. The Brahmins, then they have all the knowledge and all that. That's their area. So they have more than anybody else. But at the same time, is they have to distribute that. They have to, based on that knowledge, then deal with people very kindly. Right? The Shudra, he wants to be self-centered and all that. He can be. But at the same time, is he has to balance that with working under others for their benefit. Right? So the Vedic system takes the value of the individual and allows them to go for that in a very nice way, very full, complete way. But the idea is that you see it all in connection with the Supreme. So therefore then, and you do that work out of obligation. So that obliged work, doing that without attachment, that pleases the Lord. Pleasing the Lord, then the karmi gets his material benefits, the jnani gets his liberation, the devotee gets bhakti. So the platform of Dharma is the platform of the human being. No question of otherwise. Dharma means that's human life. Below that is not human life. Right? So, you know, it's subhuman. It may be a human form of life, but it's not human life. And so then the karmis, they take Dharma Artha Kama. That's their focus. They're situated in Dharma, but they want Kama, Artha, and Kama. For the jnani, he's situated in, you know, the aspects of Dharma, but he's detached from, the work, and he does less work, the minimal that there is, because he wants moksha. The devotee is situated in that platform of Dharma, but he uses it to please the Supreme Lord in bhakti. Right? So it's such a perfect system. So it has to be appreciated that in values, you have to be able to take your value, whatever it is in the system, and use that in context of Krishna. So you get the benefit you're looking for. You work in the field that you prefer. But it's all about doing things for Krishna. So it has that aspect of detachment, that renunciation. And so that works for everyone in the system, even the brahmacharis. You know, once they have the basic training and all that, they're trained according to their nature. So like the children, that you know, real young, they play a lot. So you give them a lot of space. You make their classes accordingly. As they get more mature, they take up responsibilities and that. But those are the responsibilities according to what their nature is. So they're not getting the results of their action in the way of personal benefits, but they, because they work in those areas, those benefits are there and they're sharing in them. Then if they graduate grihasthas, then now it's theirs. But still, it's to be given to Krishna. But still, that self, that obligatory work is still mandatory. Right? One performing one's duties is an obligation. It's not, well, if I feel like it, or like, no, it's an obligation. And so that's what the brahmachari works, is that obliged, detached work. Right? Grihastha carries on. Now the results there is vanaprastha carries on his work, but is not so interested in the results, more in the aspect of renunciation. So as a grihastha, then there is the aspect of renouncing the fruits of action to serve Krishna, but there's still maybe more of a sense of ownership, you know, of the mamata aspect. So in vanaprastha, you're trying to reduce that. And then in sannyas, it's back to that same platform like the brahmachari. So you're making a full circle, right? So you're trying to get it all to work nicely. Right? So that's the position, is that we see is from the varna and from the ashram, then everybody, according to their value, is engaged. And it must be mentioned that, yes, varnashram isn't for everybody. It's for human beings, like that. Others not, those who don't want to live on the human standard, then they'll use an unscientific form. That's the fun part, is that person on the platform of Anamoy, then he always considers that I am very sophisticated. I know science, the arts, all these things are being developed. You know, we're getting so much benefit from this, you know, and I'm enjoying so much. I'm progressing. So yes, arts and sciences, those are the symptom of the sophisticated position in Anamoya, right? You have the animals, then you have the uncivilized or unsophisticated, where they don't develop those much, then the sophisticated, where they develop that more. So from that position, then we see is that they develop these arts and sciences, right? So we're taking, oh, arts and sciences are very elevated. No, that's that level. Then when you come to pranamoy, you add in morality. Morality means social morality, in that the morality that benefits society rather than yourself. In other words, the person on pranamoy doesn't disagree with the person on anamoy. They just say that the person on anamoy is self-centered, and that's not good. It's not a good quality. You should be, selfless. And so then, in other words, selfless means everybody else can get benefit. Even though everybody in the system is doing it for themselves, but they're willing to follow those things to benefit others. That's morality, right? And ethics then is the specific activities that you do. Morality means what things you avoid, you know, and ethics means what you do. They can go together. And so then it's only then, but at the same time, still you're considering that you're the body. Even if there is a concept that there may be a supreme, but the supreme is only part of your kind of like philosophical idea to support your morality. So it just makes your morality work better. People have got conscious that morality works more smoothly, right? If there's a higher authority or something like that. So then the living entity it's not really that God's an important part. He's there. He's an appendage of that. And then they give them some kind of feeling of faith, some kind of feeling of security. It just makes the pranamoya activities go better. But it's only when you come to the manamoya platform that now you're understanding God as Shastra says, right? So there's no speculation as such on them. And so then you're accepting this is what God is. He's the controller. He's the creator. He's the maintainer. And then from that position, then now you can, again, continue to just go from your, in other words, like those in Anamoy and Pranamoy who are simply materialistic, you are materialistic also, but pious. You're willing to acknowledge God and keep God as part of your system, right? Then from there, then you know, so that's why we're saying from the platform of Dharma, then it's Artha Kama. But if Anamoya is just Kama, Pranamoya is Artha Kama, then Manamoya is Dharma Artha Kama. Right? These are the karmis. Right? Because it's about getting that material benefit and enjoying the senses. Then the second option of human life then is the jnanis, who then are interested in an impersonal feature of the Lord. So they give up that morality for social benefit. They just perform their duties in a detached way. Because when you perform your duties in a detached way, you become freed from contamination. So that part of the process they keep. And so they want to be freed from all material contamination and get liberation. While the materialists, I mean, at least the pious materialists, then they're interested in performing their duties with detachment, because that will give them the piety that they'll get more enjoyment. Then they'll get their artha for kama. And then, but the devotee, then he is seeing that he's using these positions because I have values, I have this condition, or I have abilities, and I use them for Krishna's service, for pleasing him. So instead of doing the duties to please God so that I get the material benefit, you know, as the supreme controller, I'm doing it as to please him as a person. That's the difference. So for the jnani, he's focused on Brahman. For the karma, he's focused on the paramatma aspect. But even that, you know, not so developed. And then, and the aspect of the soul is not so developed. So there's no bhakti. Right? Even though they're doing the yajnas, everything's being offered to Vishnu, but it's not devotional. So the results are always all temporary, right? It's temporary results because they don't have a proper understanding of the soul in that. Because they know that they're the soul, they know that they don't die, but only that much. So that means, okay, I'm enjoying now. I can also do in such a way that next life, I can also enjoy. They're not looking at it. No, the soul is part and parcel of the Lord, right? So he's just seeing is that God's there, but I get benefit. So I serve God. God gives me benefits. So he doesn't see the independent working of God. He doesn't see that God's independent. God works how he likes, you know, according to his plan. We just make our plan and include God in that plan. So he just becomes an aspect or an anga of our karma. Right? But for the devotee, it's about Krishna as an independent person, you know, Swarat, that we're working to please him. And if he is pleased, then that will be nice. If he's not, then we should work hard. So that kind of aspect to be able to appreciate the Lord and as the independent personality of Godhead, that then only the devotee does. Right? So that's the specialness that's there. And so from that point is that you can see is that the values of everybody has, you have to see them in context of the Lord. So that means the person on Anamoy and Pranamoy aren't going to do that like that. On Manamoy, they could start to do that. But if they do that in connection with the direction of the devotees, then slowly the karma will come to bhakti. The jnani also will come to bhakti. But why wait? The same endeavor, instead of bringing you to bhakti, can already be bhakti. So that's then what the devotees are doing. Then that means that then you're following what Krishna says here, is that whatever appears to be of any value, if it is without any without relation to me, has no reality. So if you see it in connection with pleasing Krishna, the person, it has a full reality. And if you have it, if you only see its relation to the Lord in the matter of karma and jnana, or Brahman and Parama, then it has a partial reality. It's real, but it's not a full manifestation of reality. And for those who don't see it in context of the Lord, there is no reality. It's all illusion. It exists, but it's an illusion. Just like I can see, okay, someone else is doing this. He has this facility. I really like this facility. And I'm thinking all these grants and all that, but I'm not getting them. You know, thinking, yes, I'll do this and I'll do that. But, and so therefore, it's an illusion. So it's not a reality, but it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. We're not there. We're not having those desires. Things we desire exist. You know, so all those things are there. So.
Guru Maharaj, may I ask you one question?
Yes.
Guru Maharaj, I want to ask about this, about way of yogi in this ledger of five koshas. Srila Bhaktivinoda. Yogi. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur said that from the level of Jnana Maya, the people have three ways how to go up. And he said that one of this way is a karma, and people who will prefer karma, they will follow to the way of the yoga. And he said that yoga is on the level of Jnana Maya. And in a seminar of Ishapanishad, you said that when yogi will get perfection on his last stage, he will be complete. He will see Paramatma. He will be completely pure, and he can start the bhakti from this level. And my question is, how it will? Does it mean that when yogi will finish Jnana Maya position, he will jump directly to the level of Ananda Maya, or for him, last stage of yoga will be Jnana Maya?
No, the point is if he's surrendering to the Lord, then he'll take up devotion, the practice. Right? So that'll situate him in Jnana Maya, because now he actually understands who he is and his relationship with the Lord. And then by that, then he can get to Ananda Maya. But we see is that four of them, because they if they come to that point where they're focused on the Lord and in full samadhi where they have darshan of the Lord, that brings them to that advanced platform. Right? Is it? I never remember which is which, but yoga rudra or yoga ruksha. I never remember which one's the advanced. So
Buddha is higher, Maharaj.
Sorry?
Yoga Rudra is higher, Yoga Ruksha is the lower.
Yoga Rudra, okay, is the higher. Okay, so then in that position, then the conditioning is very less, or and if they transcend that, then it's beyond, but still they have to bring themselves to the point of being practiced in devotional service, that they're associating with devotees or acting in ways that establish properly themselves. So they'll go up through that. So that's if you want to do. But if they don't, if they're only following that process to get yoga mystic cities, then they're on the level of karma. If they come to yoga rudra, they're focused on the Lord, then you can say they come to vijnana. You know, if they're interested in liberation, then like the jnanis who are there, they'll go on that platform. Or if they're or they're sadhakas, then it's devotees, and they're trying to move forward. So we these levels of consciousness, it's all these aspects, they go together. But in going together, it's where the emphasis is and what's your purpose of them. Just like we can see is that someone can be on Dharma, but their purpose of it is Artha Kama. Or they can be on Dharma and their purpose is moksha, or they can be on the platform of that Dharma and its bhakti. Right? So that's the platform they're accepting the position. Then they can move forward from there. But you start from there. Human life begins with theistic moralism, right? Or the manamoya, like that. That's where it starts. Does that make sense?
Yes, Guru Maharaj.
Yeah?
Yes, Guru Maharaj. Thank you very much. I understand.
Okay. In the Sandilya Bhakti Sutras 3186, it is said, this potency of the Lord is called Maya, for it is material by nature. in Bhagavad Gita 9:10. See, now you have these two positions that are there, as we saw before, as we were discussing, is you're always going to have the samasthi and the vyasthi. And so then the position of looking at it, when it says like God has no qualities, you're looking at it from the vyasthi point of view, which means we are here, we have material qualities, so he doesn't have any material qualities like this, he's beyond. Yeah, and when you're just saying about how, you know, he does these, he's wonderful, his body, he does so many activities, his devotee, then you're looking at the samasthi. That's his perspective. So then you're going to see always these two. So the living entities, they become bewildered by this. They think, oh, it's two, it's not one, it's one, it's not two, or, you know, it's neither, or like this. So, but no, both are there. And so when you see that those things are in context of the Lord, it's just describing the different viewpoints. Because you're supposed to know things from all the viewpoints. That's the in Bhagavad Gita 9:10, the Supreme Personality of Godhead declares, this material nature is working under my direction, O son of Kunti, and it is producing all moving and unmoving beings. By its rule, this manifestation is created and annihilated again and again. In Bhagavad Gita 7:14, the Supreme Personality of Godhead also declares, this divine energy of mind, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is difficult to overcome. But those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. So that's the trick of how one can get beyond. Is that when you surrender to Krishna, then you can get beyond. Otherwise, then it becomes very difficult. Right? Because we try to engage the material energy on our own, then it's going to be according to what our position is and that. But if we're engaging it to serve Krishna by surrendering to Krishna, then we can very easily act in a way without attachment and get beyond. Because the point is it's not about becoming detached from material energy. It's about becoming attached to Krishna. Therefore, those who have surrendered unto, that's the whole point. You surrender to Krishna. It's about Krishna. As a secondary aspect, then, you know, one is gets material facilities, one's liberated from material existence. The primary is developing love. It means that developing love for Krishna, right? That attraction to Krishna. That's the primary, right? Because so we can see is the karmis and the jnanis, the benefits that they get are side effects of bhakti. Because we see is that what's being used, the process is the same. It's not different. Like that. Some detail according to time, place, circumstance, yes. But the principle is that you yourself as a person engage in your nature, you know, without attachment in the Lord's service to please him. That's what you're trying to do. Now then, what's your understanding of that Supreme Lord? What's your understanding of, you know, where you see the Lord as the absolute truth? Do you see him as the controller of his energies? Or are you seeing him as the independent Supreme Personality of Godhead? So depending upon how you see, you're going to there. And depending on what your results you want, then also. So then for the living entity, then if he, when he surrenders to the Lord, then automatically the benefits of the karmis and jnanis one, they come on the side. But for the devotee, then it's not about that. That comes on its own. It's about pleasing Krishna and serving Krishna and developing that attachment to Krishna. In the Kannada Sutra, 4th Adhyaya, 2nd Ahanika, it is said, reality is eternal. It was not created by anyone. The atom is the smallest unit of matter. It can never be divided. Right? Reality is eternal. Right? So no one creates it. It's always there. Because Krishna, because of his existence, there's reality. He is reality. Then it's just a matter of how he expands that morality, how he manifests, I mean, that reality. Atom is smallest unit, matter can never be divided. So they're not down to the smallest unit yet. The Srimad Bhagavatam 3.11.1-2, Srimad Treya declares, the material manifestation's ultimate particle, which is indivisible and not formed into a body, is called the atom. It exists always as an invisible identity. Even after the dissolution of all forms, the material body is but a combination of its atoms, but it is misunderstood by the common man. Atoms are the ultimate state of the manifest universe. When they stay in their own forms without forming different bodies, they are called the unlimited oneness. There are certainly different bodies in physical forms, but the atoms themselves form a complete manifestation. Right? So everything that's there, its manifestation is because of the atoms. It's all made out of atoms. So ultimately, all there is atoms in the material world. So that's another unique thing, is that in the material world, then technically there's no variety because everything is just made of these atoms. That's it. So everything is that's all it is. It's just different combinations of these five elements, and you get what we see here. Right? That's it. So technically there's no variety. It appears like there's variety. Why? Because in the spiritual world, there is actual variety. Because there, the forms of Satchitananda, that's the form of the living entity. It takes that natural form because that's the nature of its consciousness. Right? So the cowherd boy has a cowherd boy form. So that's the nature. So there is variety. Well, here means you can say, oh, but then that also, you know, is just made of Satchitananda. Yes, but it's fully conscious. While here, it's not conscious. So, and it's temporary. So what's the meaning? Right? So having that temporary nature, it doesn't have the variety. That's why a living entity gets bored. They're seeing something that looks like variety. You think, oh, if I work with that, then I'll be happy. But in actuality, no, because it's just atoms. Right? Well, in the spiritual world, that's conscious entities. So working with them, then there's actual satisfaction. In Srimad Bhagavatam 11.22.4, the Supreme Personality of Godhead declares, all such philosophers spoke under the shelter of my mystic potency, and thus they could say anything without contradicting truth. Yeah, so they're all speaking, so they're not going to contradict the truth, but they're only going to present part of the truth. Right? Like we were saying about the atoms. So Kanada, he's speaking about these atoms and how everything's just atoms. But he's not really talking about the soul and God and the relation between the soul and God and those kind of aspects. He's just looking at this aspect of it. So all these six schools, they're dealing with the absolute truth, but they're just dealing with part of it. So only the Vaishnava Vedanta then deals with the absolute truth in fullness. And then the Gaudiya, they deal with it in the most fullness. Right? That's the position. Is that there you see that full manifestation that is there. Here, someone may protest. The potency creates the material world independently, without the help of anyone else. Why must you postulate the existence of a supreme God? Right? To answer this protest, the author of the sutra speaks these words. Right? So there's always going to be this aspect that's going on its own. You know. So therefore, because they don't see the person doing it, they think it's just happening on its own. Sutra 22. Matter is naturally inert, for it is neither alive nor conscious. When conscious life pushes it into action, matter appears to be alive and conscious. Udriti, Srila Jiva Goswami elaborates on the portion of Maya Shakti that is unconscious in Anucheda 58. The Shakti of transformation called Maya is of two types, the Nimitta portion called Maya and the Upadana portion called Pradana. The pure Shakti is the Nimitta, and Shakti endowed with Vyuha expansion is the Upadana. Therefore, sometimes Maya is also said to be unconscious, referring to Upadana. Vijnanam cha vidyam. Vijnanam cha. Both knowledge and ignorance. Okay, this is Taittiriya Upanishad. 261. So the ability to control the living entities through all that, it says, therefore, is said to be the pure Shakti. Then endowed with the expansion is Upadana, is how the different aspects are there and everything, and what they manifest and everything like that. So from the Upadana, you're going to get all the elements that you make things with. Then you apply the modes onto that, and then you get action. Right? So in other words, the action itself, you know, the consciousness of that and why one's inspired, the pushing for action, that's the nimitta. But the things that you're acting with, that you apply your effort towards, that will then adjust and become something else, make the transformation that is desired. That's the Upadana. So that's why you see is that, let's say, for many, you know, if we're dealing on in a way, especially the farther down we go in consciousness, then you have other people. So they're dealing with people, but they're only dealing with them in Upadana. It's just that through them, there'll be a transformation that you get what you want. So that's why then, only when you see is that you have the individual, right? So then you get that with the pranamoy, then you see there's life there. But it's still just you work with other life so that they get, and you want to get, but you're comfortable that they also get. Right? And so then if you take it, I work, they get what they deserve, I get what I deserve. If you take it to more extreme, then that selflessness goes to everybody gets the same amount, no matter what they do. Right? And so you'll see that kind of element that's there for the common person. But then you'll have to have, but that still that standard is set by the Supreme. Like an example of equal outcome. Then we have after crossing the Red Sea in a dramatic style and then entering to Sinai, then for some years of moving in Sinai in the desert there, then every morning with the dew there'd be this food, manna, it'd be like a bread, you could collect it. And so it didn't matter how much you collected, you would get how much you required, right? So if you collect more than you required, when you actually sat to eat, it would reduce down. If someone you require less than you required, it would expand to enough. So everyone got what they required. So even then, the equal outcome means the outcome is what everybody requires, not what that it looks exactly the same, right? So you have that element, but that's just for a general thing. Then the point is then people work, they get like this. So you always have to see is that you have the balance between you put in your effort and then what you require. Right? And so that's going to be your nimitta aspect. That's where your consciousness and everything is. The field in which you function, that's the upadana. You have to be conscious of the field, but you're conscious of the field in as much as it works for how it's applied to elevate your position, right? So if the consciousness is God conscious, you elevate in that way. If it's not, only partially, then you get Brahman, and partially you get the karma. Yeah. So, you know, as we said before, you have to understand them both together because it is Krishna's potency, and therefore it works in the way Krishna says. We can say, no, we'll do whatever we like, but when you study it, you see, no, it's Krishna's potency. The author explains how the unconscious glow, infused with the jivas, manifests variety in Manocheda 56. The result of Maya is the universe. By the Lord's entrance into the elements, they combine together and form an unconscious glow, from which the universal form composed of a mass of jivas arose. Srimad Bhagavatam 3:26-51. Yeah. So as we remember, is that the unconscious, the elements are there. So them being, agitated, that you get the separate elements. Then they're agitated, and that now the Lord enters them so that they can be combined together to create upadana. You know, and that makes the universal form. So that goes into the unconscious globe, from there, then you have the universal form. Universal form will be the Lord and how he is nimitta, how he is upadana, how he is the cause and effect. And how that combination together is the universal form is this thing dealt with in this way by this person at this time in this place will get you this result. But if the time's wrong, the place is wrong, the qualification of the individual is wrong, you won't get that result. Because the two go together. You can't separate them. You can't separate cause and effect. Because an effect is simply a manifestation of an aspect of the cause. And you appreciate the cause when it's manifest as effect. Like cooking exists whether someone cooks or not, but you appreciate cooking when it's manifest. The universal globe, called Visesha, is surrounded by layers of elements such as water, each 10 times thicker than the previous layer, covered by a layer of property on the outside. Within the universe are the varieties of planets, which are a form of the Supreme Lord, Srimad Bhagavatam 3:26-52. Right, so it's universal globe. So he becomes that. That's the universal form, because all those things are there. The blueprint is there, that the universal, that the primary creation, but then the secondary creation is where you manifest it. Right, so you see, is that, you know, we're talking, is that based on the primary creation, that's how things work. They don't work separately than that. But then when you put that together and manifest it as something, you get. So that's how you get the, also in the practical, you get the aspect of the you can say the strategy is the primary creation, and then the operational is your secondary creation. And then what you do with it, then that's the nimitta, that's your tactical technique. Commentary by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Matter is naturally inert, for it is neither alive nor conscious. It has no power to perform any action. When conscious light pushes it into action, matter appears to become warm with life. It is under these conditions that matter appears to act, becoming the creator of the universe. That is the meaning. This is described by Bhagavad Gita. Right? So consciousness makes it act. So therefore the Lord glances is there. And then we see that continuing ongoing because the jivas being there, therefore they're putting in their consciousness. Therefore then you see that the constant flow and change of the material energy. This is declared in Bhagavad Gita 9:10, where the Supreme Personality of Godhead declares, "This material nature is working under my direction, O son of Kunti, and is producing all moving and unmoving entities, unmoving beings. In Aitareya Upanishad 111, it said, with a glance, the Supreme Personality of Godhead created eternal worlds. In Bhagavad Gita 15:14, the Supreme Personality of Godhead declares, I am the fire of digestion in every living body, and I am the air of life, outgoing and incoming, by which I digest the four kinds of foodstuffs. In Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Kapila 3:26-19 explains, after the Supreme Personality of Godhead impregnates material energy with his internal potency, material nature delivers the sum total of the cosmic intelligence, which is known as Hiranyamaya. This takes place in material nature, which is agitated by the destinations of the conditioned souls, right? So all these souls have places to go, right? Places to go, people to see, things to do, you know, all that kind of stuff. And so in that, then she then makes all those arrangements because it's Krishna's controlling it. Living entities are here to engage themselves in such a way that eventually they come back to Krishna. But in the meantime, they're going to be in their particular situations that they happen to be in, whatever those situations are. And so then, you know, from their previous work. And so by previous work, then they're in the next situation. But the idea is within that, then at some point they'll come in contact with the devotees in devotional service and then change the direction. The Shankya Acharyas explained, it is the material nature that acts. The Supreme Personality of Godhead remains aloof, like a lotus leaf untouched by water. In Srimad Bhagavatam 3:26-17, Lord Kapila explained, my dear mother, O daughter of Swayambhuva Manu, the time factor, as I have explained, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, from whom the creation begins as a result of the agitation of the neutral, unmanifested nature. Right? So he's a consciousness that pushes into action then the primary and secondary creations. Then how specifically they'll be manifested in a particular point, that's then according to the living entities and their desires and action. So it's still based on the Lord. It's still, that's why the point is you can't make so much of a distinction because material energy is acting on behalf of the Lord, but at the same time, it's different than the Lord. He's separate, he's beyond. One has to see the oneness, one has to see the difference. One only sees the oneness, there'll be a problem. If you only see the difference, there'll be a problem. In the Markandeya Purana, Devi Mahatmya, Brahma tells Prakriti, you maintain everyone, you create the universe, you protect it, it enters you at the end. Yeah, so therefore he creates it, he maintains it, he destroys it, he protects it. In the next sutra, the author shows that the illusory potency Maya is a prison for the conditioned souls. Sutra 23. The material world is like a prison where souls who hate the Supreme Personality of Godhead are confined. There, the souls are bound with many shackles, such as the material bodies at which they dwell. Udriti, Srila Jiva Goswami. Srila Jiva Goswami describes the process of the souls binding in the material world in Anucheda 22 and 23 as follows. Seeing Prakriti, which creates the bodies of the living beings, similar to itself, but with great variety through the gunas, the jiva becomes immediately bewildered by avidya. Srimad Bhagavatam 3:26-5. Because he's seeing all this variety. But as we mentioned before, on the material platform, there's no variety. It's all just the material elements. Right, you know, everything means all that what we perceive, that's the earth part. It's all just earth. So all we're looking at is different shapes and forms of earth. So it's not a variety. Like if you look at a desert, it's just no variety. But if you get down and look at each grain under a microscope, you'll see there'll be some slight difference in shape and size and like that and color. So but the point is that it's a variety within an unlimited mass, because it says, oh, but there's so much. No, but there's so much more. It's, each layer is 10 times thicker than the last one. Right? And that's covered by Pradhan, which is all of it together. Yeah. Yes, so because they're focusing on the material variety, therefore they're an illusion, because they think the variety has reality, when actually it's just Krishna's potency. By his agitation, by the time factor, therefore then you get all the different forms, because all these forms take time, right? They're not eternal, so then they start from something and develop into something else. And also by time, they're destroyed and they go back to their origins. So therefore, these illusions were by avidya, because without the Lord, he doesn't understand this. You understand this, then when you look at material nature, you're not actually looking at material nature. You're looking at how the Lord is, you know, how the material nature being an energy of the Lord is working under the Lord's direction. Then you're in vidya.
Arash?
Yes.
Like we see currently, when I was studying on the education, many new theories of education are based on a collection of data and researching, just like you do in other fields of mathematics and sciences. Now, because of that, the whole perspective of education was changing. What was like 30 years before, it was more on the psychological needs of the humans and then like that. So 30 years, from last 30 years, they're busy doing that, bringing more data, information and collecting, and then changing the whole theories. And now when the modes change again, then again, they have to redo the whole system again based on that particular perspective. So all they are doing is just shifting from one to another. But actually, it's not knowledge.
Yes, it's not knowledge, because they don't know what they're dealing with. Only when you see things in context of the Lord, right, as Krishna mentions, if you see your value in the context of the Lord, it's reality. Otherwise, it's just illusion. So if it's an illusion, what does it matter what kind of illusion it is? You know, it's just like if you're flying in the sky in your dream, what does it matter how high you are, or, you know, how quickly you're, you know, how you're flying? It's all an illusion.
But it's so interesting how much involved everybody becomes. Like, they're so much absorbed thinking that if you do this, if you like explain in this way, then the whole situation will change. Everything will go progressively.
Yeah, the difficulty is they're changing the situation and they're getting the situational change, but they'll be bewildered because they will find that the qualitative change is not there, because the students, the qualities won't improve, because they're thinking, oh yes, if we become more leftist, more Marxist, more socialist, then everything will become nicer for everyone. But the point is then in these, you're not, they don't deal with the individual. It's about, we want to do something for everybody, but in doing something for everybody, everybody has to become nobody, right? And so then it's not understood that, so because of that, the individual is not considered. So on the big, great, grander scale or on the smaller scale, it doesn't matter. On the bigger scale, you know, you have, you know, one example, it applies for everybody, right? And also if you deal with the individual, they have to fit in what's for everybody. So either way, it doesn't matter. It's an impersonal process. So they're only looking at the situation, right? They're not looking at the particular individual qualities, willpower, you know, and application, you know, the nimitta aspect, because who's the nimitta when you get into these leftist things? It's the government, not the people. The people just exist in this so-called state of euphoria or something like that. And the government controls everything. So that's why you see is the more and more the government controls, the more and more left it has to be for it to do that. You know? So that's why you see, you know, this modern micromanagement comes in when you're dealing more with a left perspective. Right? So that's the difficulty is as you get into these, because these are meant for mass, how to control the mass. Right? That's their purpose. And so that's all they want to do is control the students, just become mass rather than individuals. But that's the fun part. They talk about individuals because all they need is one case that supports what they do, and then it's for everybody. Even though they're talking statistics, right? But the statistics will only tell you what the field is. It won't tell you the individual, their free will, and cultivation of their qualities. That goes before, like you said, it was psychological. Before it was about developing the individual. It was like considered before a Bachelor of Arts degree was to cultivate the individual as a sophisticated, you know, or an educated member of upstanding member of society. Right. And then when you go back before that, it was you were studied in religion and the Bible or this or that, whatever it is. Then you are an upstanding member of the community, right? So you know, slowly just drop down and down and down. You know, they started from the theistic moralism and down into the atheistic moralism. Now they just go down into atheistic amoralism. You know, they'll have their own because you can say, "It's no," but they're setting standards. But those standards are just what's good for them. It's not necessarily good for society because. If you see the statistics, whatever they do now, come back in 10 years, you'll have to change it because it does not work. It's always like it. As soon as you get more of this kind of this socialist kind of thing being applied, then everybody's happy and going and talking about how fabulous it is because it's just a situation. We have the situation we want, but then they see from the statistics that no one's learning, no one's developing, everything's falling apart. So then they have to, again, try to create a new situation rather than address that, no, you're dealing with individuals. So it's like that, you know? And if you say, okay, but then we go more where it's about the individual and this and that, but it has to be seen in the context of God. So in other words, the general things that apply to everyone have to be seen in connection with Krishna, and the individual seen in connection with Krishna. So it's always this balance that you can say, which is more important, the institution or the individual? It's God's more important. Because if you have God, then the institution means something and the individual means something. And then they have a relation. How do you have a relation between the institution and the individual if you don't have Krishna? So there is there. That's why Krishna says, whatever you value, you don't see it in connection with him. Like the other day, someone was saying, I'm an institutional man. You know, I do what's, you know, the institution at the expense of the individual. And they're complaining about someone being individual and you're not considering the institution. But the point is what's God's consideration? What does God want? Then you have to look at it. Then you can actually understand what's correct. But otherwise, it's just the individual. And as long as we have the situation of the individual, it's good. Or if we have the situation of the institution, it's good. So you see, it always tends towards impersonal. That's the point, is you go from the situational up to seemingly personal and then go back to the situational. Because forward means God. Forward means the Supreme. When you see the Supreme is there, then it moves forward. So that's the whole point. When you see material nature, living entity and God together, then you actually see, then you have knowledge. And if you don't, you're an illusion. And whatever you do will fail. It may fail in this way or fail in that way. You know, it's just like, you know, hey, yeah. So that's the point, but it will fail. Because the material world is meant to take you back to Godhead. It doesn't have another purpose. Right? But because we have desire, then therefore we go after those desires following the laws of God. And then it goes nicely. But then you're ultimately supposed to acknowledge God's presence as a person and work in devotion. That's the direction we want to go. That's the actual position. Right? Does that make sense? So that's what you're trying to get. Otherwise, then it doesn't really work out. It doesn't work. It means people can say whatever they like, but if there is, why isn't there one nice steady system? Vedic system, you see, it's been running, you know, up to just recently when they tried, when the Indians got rid of it. Otherwise, the British weren't so foolish. They left the Vedic system intact. Right? And then when they messed with it, that's when they lost their position. In other words, they were supporting the Vedic system. They got what they want. When the British thought, okay, now that we're getting what we want, now we'll get rid of the system. As soon as they messed with it, immediately the process started. And they lost everything. You know? So that's the whole point, is that when it's seen in the context of Krishna's systems, it works. Everybody gets it. As soon as you remove it, the British, then they messed with it, they lost, and then the Indians messed with it, they lost. So it's the way it is. Unless you see the material nature in the context of the Lord, you do not have knowledge. So it doesn't matter how many facts and figures you have, it's still not going to tell you anything, because facts and figures are arbitrary. Which ones are you looking at? You know, like that. Which one are you looking at? You know, it's just like you can say it's education. Okay, it's all about getting a degree. Then if you have a degree, this is what's sold. You have a degree, you'll have a job, you have a job, you have money, you have money, you have facilities, you're gonna have a family, you have that, you'll be happy. But let's say you have a job opportunity, 100 people show up, they have the same degree. What does the businessman look for? It has nothing to do with the degree. He just uses the degree as an excuse to cut it down from 1.4 billion people down to 100. That's, you know, he has to start somewhere. So by then saying, okay, only those with this degree, then you can apply. So it just cuts down the field. That's all. But otherwise, he looks for the personality, the willpower, the nature. And that, like you see, is that different people, they'll say, okay, if the guy is dutiful, you know, and very enthusiastic, then you give him this kind of work. You know, if he, you know, and he's intelligent. You know, if he's intelligent, then you give him this. If he's just dutiful and enthusiastic, he'll give him this work. You know, but if he's lazy and intelligent, you give him this kind of work. Right? You see, in Manu, the same thing is that when he talks about kings, he's establishing his kingdom. How does he decide? The first thing is, you know, he has to develop, you know, he has the gurus and all that. Then he has to have his ministers. How do you decide what minister does what? By their qualities. Right? These are the qualities of a minister. So someone who has this quality, he does this ministerial work. Someone with this quality does this. Someone with this does this. Someone with this. Someone who has these two does this, these two like this. But someone who has all five, he's the prime minister. So it's all based on qualities. So the modern thing today is just based on particular knowledge and skill, and on statistics, is kind of like, how is that going to actually work? Right? It won't work. So everything will have to adjust. So that's the point, is that they're adjusting, they're working with material energy and only seeing the statistics based on the material forms that come up from, but they're not looking at the endeavor. Why is somebody endeavoring? That question is never looked up. Well, you say nowadays the whole thing, the racism, this, but why are they racist? That's not looked at. No, you shouldn't be racist. Okay, good, nice. But why are they racist in the first place? That you have to do. Right? You know, why are they greedy? Why are they envious? Why are they? That's not looked at. And ultimately, unless you get back the point, if you're envious of God, you're naturally going to be envious of everybody. You know? And so, that kind of aspect, unless that's seen, you can't progress. It means you'll progress a little bit this way, that way. It'll just be moving around. And so if you're only used to this much movement, then you think, you know, a little bit of movement's a lot. But the point is it's all within the it's like you have so many worms in a can. You know, they just keep moving around. They're on the bottom, they go up, and this, and that. And so constantly moving, but no one's getting anywhere. So sometimes the worms, the bugs on the bottom, sometimes on the top. No, they just keep moving through. So that's the material energy. So one has to be very, very careful as you see is that they're going to have all these things that they're dealing with, like you said, facts, the figures, you know, the tactical, you can look at all that. But the point is technically is then what are you going to do with it? And then that's going to be based on, well, what are you trying to accomplish by the operational? That's going to be based on your strategy. And so if your strategy is impersonal, then, you know, that's how things will work. That's how you'll run everything. But if it's personal, then everything will be personal. And if it's impersonal, everything will be impersonal. You know, so it's just like you said, you have this board. Anybody's met the board? Anybody knows the board? Do you even know the names of people on the board? No. They make all the decisions. No one knows who they are. So that's the whole idea. That's the perfection. Complete, absolute control. Zero responsibility, zero accountability. No one even knows who you are. So that's where you see this. That therefore, because they focus on that, they just see the variety through the gunas, then they become like dead matter. Right? You know, they take it for granted, the nimitta, but the point is they become like upadana. They just become dead matter, as good as. So therefore, that's why you become aware of nimitta. The Vedic is always being aware of nimitta. Who you know, how something's used. So who you are in connection of how it's used and all that. Then you're like that. Then you can develop something. This works and that doesn't. So this makes you pious, that doesn't. But then the whole point of who actually are you? You're the soul. Okay, so being the soul, then you're trying to apply yourself, with this aspect of nimitta. So then, but you're using it in the negative, so you're trying to give up all action and all that. But then someone who's that higher than the devotee, they see all nimitta in the context of serving Krishna. Right? So then that's the difficulty. Does that make sense? So even nowadays, the facts and figures, they're just upadana. You know, not that they're not valuable in certain ways, but they think the facts and figures are the actual position. So we change those facts and figures. That's what we're doing. Not facts and figures are showing an example of nimitta. These facts and figures show that this nimitta is working like this. But all they do is know these facts and figures are here. We want the facts and figures there. And so then nimitta's involved, but it's about changing this for that. So we just do what it gets. So it doesn't matter what you have to do to get there because it's impersonal. Therefore, you can do anything you want to get it. So they justify, you know, the means justifies the ends. This comes from where you don't have theism or moralism. Otherwise, you can't just do whatever you like. The end is there, but you still have to consider, you know, everybody else and what are the ultimate standards. So you see is that it's all based on, even though they say they're progressing, they're going backwards. See, it's like this. If you're facing away from God, let's say God's on this side, and you have your back to God, and you move forward, right? So that's the thing. Progressive means going farther away from God. And say regressive means now you're going back towards God. But what they don't understand is when you, at devotional service, you turn around, then going towards God is progressive. Right? Going in that same direction. So that's the problem is people don't turn around, then it seems regressive. But since it is going towards the Lord, it's a better position. It should be understood that the intrinsic shakti of the jiva will give him knowledge of his real self, pratyayana, whereas turning outwards, understood through the words, vilokya, mumuhe, and yana guhaya, the jiva in ignorance obtains material knowledge. Right? So when he keeps the consciousness inside about, you know, who am I, who is God, who are all these different things, then he attains proper knowledge of the self. But if it not, he puts his consciousness outside, right? Then he becomes absorbed in material knowledge. Does that make sense? Yeah, because here the jivas are inside, the super soul is inside. The Lord is pervading everything. Outside, whatever you see, that's all material energy. So that, therefore, inside means seeing the self. So in the spiritual world, then there is no difference between the outside and inside. So therefore, then there's no problem there. But here you have to make a distinction. Here there's duality. And everybody's trying to make it one. Ajnane navritam jnanam tena muhyanti janat vaha. The living entities are bewildered by that ignorance and blame the Lord. Bhagavad Gita 15:15. The jiva contracts matter by the influence of maya, takes on similar form due to upadis, and enjoys material objects. He thus experiences samsara. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:87-38. Right, so he's bewildered by the ignorance. He blames the Lord for it, but you're the one dealing with it. You know, but Lord shouldn't have made it that way. But if everything's going nice, or you've not made it that way, no, that's fine. Yeah. So that shows we're dependent. So when we take shelter of the Lord, then these things won't bother us. Yeah. So as his consciousness is projected externally, then he is controlled by maya. He becomes under the influence of samsara. As he turns inwardly, then he starts to see the relationship between himself and the Lord and his situation in material energy. Then from that, now he elevates himself. Treater's commentary is as follows. Because the jiva, saha, embraces ignorance, ajam, caused by maya, ajaya, it serves jushan, the body and senses, gunan, or identifies with them as a self. After that, taranu, with its qualities such as bliss, ananda, hidden, apeta, bhagaha, it adopts similar qualities and attains bhajati, samsara, ityum. So, therefore, we see is that when you're focusing on material energy, you're looking away from ananda. You have satchit ananda. So, if you're focusing on the externals, you're focusing on the upadana, which is the sat aspect. Though here everything's temporary, but you're looking at existence of things. And then you're using your willpower for that. Right? So on the internal is you're looking at who you are, who God is in that, and Krishna, God's anandamaya vyasa. And so therefore facing Krishna. So you're going to use your willpower, you know, in the situation you're in towards Krishna. Right? So Krishna becomes the thing. The situation becomes just supportive of the willpower to supportive of serving Krishna, of Ananda. But if it's the other way, you rejected Ananda, and then we're looking for happiness. And so then the focus is going to be on material nature. So how your situation defines you. You know, your house, your degree, your clothes, your car, your everything, whatever is the sit, that defines you rather than what you do with it. So that's the material consciousness. Does that make sense? Yeah. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. Jai Shri Prabhupada ki Jai.